Hi, everybody. I'm Jack. This is my favorite part of the meeting, and it's not just because I'm doing the talking. I got my commitment is to get the speakers for this group every month. It's one of my favorite jobs in the world. Rick, in particular, you know, Rick, I don't know how many years ago we met. It was a long time ago. I got called by Mary Pearl to come and participate in a conference called the Rose City Getaway in Little Rock, Arkansas.
Right. First time we met.
And it's a weekend conference, but it happens that by Saturday night, it's all done. At which point we all go back to our rooms and change into our pajamas, which makes me grateful to be one of the few men in Al-Anon. And then we go back to a room and we play some kind of a Trivial Pursuit game. I don't know what it is. And the two team captains are Rick and his sponsor, Mary Pearl, otherwise referred to as Merp. And Rick, I was honored. Rick picked me for his team. And about, I don't know, 15 minutes into the game, we're kind of kicking some butt and taking names, which is when we find out what a poor loser Mary Pearl is. And I'm not going to claim that we threw the game, but we all believe that it was in Rick's best interest if Mary Pearl won that night. So at the end of the night, she won. I'm not going to tell you the fix was in. There's too much of that going on the news already tonight. But it is my great pleasure to introduce you guys to my friend, Rick J. from Toronto, Canada.
Fantastic. I forgot about that, Jack. That's right. Keller Trivial Pursuit. Take no prisoners. Anyhow, I'm a slowly recovering Al-Anon. My name is Rick, and I am emphatically my own qualifier. Lovely to be here with you tonight. Good evening. It's what time in your neck of the woods? It's 7:21, 10:21 here, and I feel alive, alert, and awake. Just wonderful, wonderful to be with you. I had an opportunity to come to Southern California, Northern California a number of times, and I absolutely love your energy face to face. And I can tell you without a doubt that energy is coming through this screen as well. So just wonderful, wonderful to be here. And I'm happy to say that by the grace of God, I'm working the steps and being an active member of this Al-Anon, the Al-Anon Fellowship, and by making a strong and ongoing commitment with it, with a sponsor. I'm happy to say that I've been a continuous member of Al-Anon since the 10th day of April in 1987. I came all those years ago because I felt the heat. I too wanted the pain to end. And I stay all these years later because I see the light. And it's not the light of an oncoming train anymore. It's this widening, ever-expanding light of really basking in the spirit. I get a daily little reflection every day in my email. Many of you probably get the same one. And last week or maybe 2 weeks ago, the writer just kind of put this simple little sentence in that, you know how sometimes you just hear one little thing and it just goes bang. And he said this, he said, God is obvious. I thought, what a perfect way to talk about an awakening into the spirit. God has become obvious in my life. That was not the case in the beginning because I was as asleep to God as anybody was. That's why I needed an awakening. I didn't know I needed an awakening. I just wanted the pain to stop and I wanted her back. That's really what I wanted. That's why I came. But God had a totally, totally different plan. It doesn't say having had a spiritual awakening and you got her back. Doesn't say that. Doesn't say done these steps and you got a better job. I did these steps and you did this. Yeah, it doesn't say any of that. It says one thing. Rick, if you do these steps, you're going to have an awakening into the spirit. Period. That's what it said. Then I have to do a few more things. Oh, my God. I think by the time we got to 12, there'd be no more to do. All contraire. There's an assignment and a challenge. Carry that message and then practice this and absolutely everything we do. So I continue to stay because I want that light to get brighter. And as I heard a much loved, now past member of AA say one time, and this has become my new mantra, I want to see how good this can get. And so I'm here today, and every morning I wake up, I say out loud, good morning, God. And that is my decision on that day to remain committed to this spiritual way of life. My home group is the Oakville Saturday Morning Al-Anon Family Group. I used to live in Toronto. I lived in Toronto for about 52 years of my life, but then I I met her and moved, and met a wonderful her, actually, and still still married to her. And so I moved to a smallish town outside of Toronto called Oakville on the north shore of Lake Ontario. Any of you know that area? If you can, if you don't, then if you can picture where Niagara Falls is, I'm about 60 minutes away from Niagara Falls, or about 75 minutes away from the New York Ontario border, and Buffalo, New York. And if you don't know where that is, look it up on the map. Anyhow, that's where I live. And the thing I love about my group is that we have three topics. 1 week it's a step, the next week it's a tradition, and the next week it's a concept. Oh God, every time I get to the concept, I go, oh really? Did I wake up on Saturday morning to listen to this? And then every single time we're finished a concept meeting, I go, wow, there is so much in there. And then when we have five meetings in a month, we have a speaker. And we stay focused on the solution. There's no whining in the group. We're not talking about him, her, or them. We're talking about how we apply these spiritual principles to us. And that's the thing that I love. Jack, thanks for the invite. It's nice to get you know a little better. I really appreciate being invited, but I've also enjoyed our little email, our message chats. It's been quite nice just to kind of get to know each other, because we've known each other for a long time, met here and there, but it really has been lovely just to have these little kind of conversations. So beautiful. I have a lot of respect for you, for what you do for Al-Anon, who you are, and your never-ending willingness to be of service. You really are one of my heroes in Al-Anon. So it's really a pleasure to have you invite me to speak at your group. And so welcome to my home. This is my office in my house, and thank you for welcoming me to yours. And thank you for all the people who are on my screen who actually have your pictures on. If you haven't done any one of these Zoom talks yet, just imagine. Because I treat them like I would if I was going to a real meeting, except I don't have to get in my car or get in a plane and go somewhere. I still get a shower. I get dressed appropriately for the type of meeting. So if it's a group like this, I'll wear a dress shirt and a dress pair of pants. If it's a conference, they wear a shirt, like a shirt and tie and a jacket. And so imagine you're doing that. So you've been asked, Karen, let's say, you've been asked to speak at a Zoom meeting. And you've never done that. So, okay, think of a few things you want to say. And, okay, I got to share my story. But there's nobody in the room, in your front room, in the computer. And so you want people to be on the screen. And you turn on the screen, and all there are black rectangles with a name in it. So you've prepared your talk. You've gotten dressed. You're ready to go. And they say, now, here's Karen. And what it's like if everybody's screen is off is like standing with your toes against the baseboard, your nose against the wall, and trying to share your story. That's what this doing this is like. So the fact that so many of you are actually alive, I can see you nodding your head up and down and maybe giggling a bit or something. I'm connected. And thank you so very, very much for that. And I don't know what's happening on the other seven screens, but the mine, I can see you. So that feels really, really good. The first time, when this whole thing hit, can you believe it? Back in March 13th, I think is when we shut down here in where I live. I was in Florida, near Sarasota, Anna Marie Island. My wife and I were having a week of just fun in the sun because it gets cold here in February and March. And so we go south. And the Canadian government had put out a travel advisory basically saying to the Canadians, come on home. Well, heck with it. We're not coming home. We're enjoying the sunshine. And then I got an email from my medical insurance provider, because when you're not a U.S. citizen, when you travel to the U.S., you have to have your own medical insurance in case something happens. And so I had it, and I got an email from the medical insurance provider saying, you have 10 days to get home. Really? That got my attention. The prime minister, to heck with him. The insurance company, I'm going home. So everybody in Florida from Canada must have got the same email, because it was this like drive to Bethlehem north from Florida up to Canada. And as we were driving, things were shutting down as we were driving. So I was staying in a hotel with my wife in Cincinnati, and I got an email from somebody who's here tonight, DS from Omaha. He said, hey, Rick, why don't you join us for a Zoom meet? Join in on our men's Zoom meeting. To which I replied, "What's Zoom?" I had never heard of it in my life. So he replied, "It's a way to get together and have a meeting on a computer." So I said, "Why not?" So I did that. It's pretty cool, actually. And then a few days after I got home, I got this call from a woman in your state, Yvonne, saying, "Hey, we're doing this worldwide Al-Anon conference on Zoom." I said, "What?" She said, "Yeah, we're going to do that." She said, "AA did it the week before. We're going to do it at March 28th. She said, "Would you like to talk?" I said, "This is so stupid. Why not? Like, how do you do that? I've never been on one of these things other than in a meeting." And so my sponsor got asked to do a few others. And so we're kind of talking to each other, how do you do this? And so we decided we're going to do it like we do a regular conference. So I sign in, and there on the morning of March 20th, I got my suit on and all ready to go, nervous like crazy. And there were 15 people. And I think, this is going to be a bomb. This is not going to work. So I say to Yvonne, I said, "Where's everybody?" She said, "Oh, they're in the waiting room." To which I replied, "Waiting room?" I didn't know. And this is like so new. She said, "Oh yeah, there's like 500, oh, 550. I said, "What?" She said, "Yeah, it's just multiplying." I said, "I got to go to the bathroom." Then she gave me the best Zoom advice I've had yet. She said, "Turn off your microphone." I said, "Perfect advice." I turned off the microphone, go to the bathroom, and come back. There were 1,000 people. And it stayed 1,000 people the whole weekend. It was like unbelievable. But when you take a look at that at the broader context, look at who we are, the members of Al-Anon. Within 2 weeks, we made the pivot from meeting face-to-face to meeting in this format. Now, when we did that back in March, I thought, yeah, this will last 5 or 6 weeks and we'll be back. Who knew? I don't know what it's like where you live, but things are getting pretty dire here. And so we're kind of hoping where I live, it's not shut down, but two jurisdictions over, it is. So they're all coming over here to shop. Not working out too well. But look at us. We want to connect, and we have connected. And here I am from Toronto, coming all the way to your group in California, feeling connected tonight. What a beautiful thing. And look at the universal access this thing has given us. Doesn't matter where you're from anymore. Doesn't kind of matter what time, none of that stuff. Wherever you want to go to a meeting, you can go to a meeting. Even in different languages, people translate all kinds of crazy things. It's absolutely fantastic. Haven't we all heard for years that Al-Anon is a worldwide fellowship? We've all known that. It's like an intellectual construct. Yeah, I know that. But really, all I really experience is my little group or when I go to a conference or something like that. Now, I have a visceral experience that we universally around the world know the pain of living with and loving an alcoholic. We universally, even when we don't speak our language, understand what it's like to hurt, to be confused, to be angry, to have alcoholism, the family disease. And it doesn't matter where we're from. I feel that now. And I feel that my universe has expanded, just like I feel my spirituality has expanded through this thing. One of the great lines I heard on early on in this thing, and it has really stayed mythy, it's kind of not why is this happening to me? It's what do I need to learn as this is happening? Because I well and truly am powerless over this virus. But I'm not powerless I'm not powerless to bring myself to God, who will then show me how I can grow. And we need to do as much as we can for the newcomers. And I believe that when we do get back to face-to-face, I think these things we're going to live side by side for a long time with face-to-face and Zoom. But we need to do as much as we can for the newcomers. Where I live, in AAN and Al-Anon, the people that chair a meeting do this funny thing, because I've never seen it happen anywhere else. And I asked the chairperson to qualify. Like anybody's here who doesn't qualify. Like, I mean, it doesn't really make a lot of sense to me. Like, why would you want to come here if you didn't qualify? Wouldn't you just rather be watching a movie or hanging out? And if life is working, why are you coming here? And at least in the beginning, I'm keep coming back because life is working. But anyhow, we do this qualification thing. And this is exactly what the third tradition says. You know, the only requirement for membership, there's a requirement to get in here. Only requirement for membership is that there be a problem of alcoholism, exactly what it says, in a relative or friend. And I'd like to tell you, I'm embarrassed to say this, that for too many years of me being in it, sitting in an Al-Anon meeting, I misread that tradition to say the only requirement for membership is that there be a problem of a relative or friend who has alcoholism. I kept my focus firmly planted on the alcoholic. And at the depth of my being, believed that that is the person that is my problem. And so when I hear people, when I qualify it, I'll talk about the other alcoholics. But what I really need to start doing is identifying with what it is that I do. And I'm going to talk about that as we move on. But just so that I can kind of get to that alcoholic part, I've had five of them. Two by birth, a grandmother and a father. And then really more germane to who I am and to what alcoholism, the family disease, looks like in my life, I've chosen three. Two of those I met in Al-Anon. Just so you know, that you don't have to even be drinking. I can just kind of, I can go, hello, 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 oh, hello. And there's just something in the alcoholic that calls to my soul. And I think many of us are like that. Because I'd go out with somebody for a short time, that was over, somebody for a short time, then I met the first one. Oh my God, this is heaven. I don't even know why it was like that. AA's, you know, what's that old gag line? Anybody can join AA, but you got to know someone to get an Al-Anon. And that's so true for everybody in this room. And so many of us come because of somebody else. And then it takes a long time, or it took me a long time to switch from the side that said, it's you, to the side that says, oh my goodness, look at what I'm doing to my own life. So I want to say that this, and I want to say that unequivocally, I now believe, and I now know, for me, that alcoholism is a disease, a family disease, and as such, it's a disease I have. Apart from anybody's drinking, apart from the condition of anybody's alcoholism, this is something I have. And for me now, they're all gone. I'm now married to an Al-Anon. Well, you wonder who you're obsessed about when you're married with an Al-Anoner. But anyway, the three alcoholics that I hooked up with are gone. My father's passed, my grandmother's passed. So you'd think if they were the problem, you'd think I'd be good. Au contraire, I kind of got worse when all that went away. Because then I had to start to take a look at me and what is it that I do to my life? And I'll get much more specific as we move on to that. But anyhow, to start at the beginning of my story, I started in this deal. I said in the beginning that I've been here since the 10th day of April, 1987. Well, that's my second time. I'm well and truly an Al-Anon retread. Because I actually started when I was a little boy. I was 11 years old. I didn't start on my own volition. I didn't say, hey, I need to go to Alateen. But my mother, in 1964, long time ago, oh my goodness, started going to Al-Anon. And she kind of started to see that the reality, Alateens was just starting to happen here in Southern Ontario where I live. And she wanted to kind of get some of the good stuff she was finding for herself and give it to her kids. And so there was this conference that started, an Alateen conference that was happening in 1968, and they put out this call and said, hey, you know, is there anybody who would like to take Alateens into their home? Remember when we could do that? I don't know if you could do that in California. You sure can't do that now. Just say, hey, you know, we have some Alateens coming from out of town. Can they bill it in your house? Oh my God. Now you got to give a pint of blood and submit to a retinal scan before you can even come close to working with the Alateens. But back then you could just invite them into your house. And that's what happened to me. And that was really the first of many, many spiritual experiences. Because you see, I grew up in this crazy alcoholic environment. It was nuts. I was afraid all the time. I peed all the time. I was in the bathroom a lot. I was always throwing up. I was always hiding. I was always looking for ways to protect myself. My father's mother was from Scotland, Glasgow. She had, I don't even know how many brothers and sisters she had. They seemed to be endless. And many of them came to Canada, and we would have these clan gatherings. And if you remember, do you remember when drinking was fun? There's a marvelous speaker, you all know him, in your state. I heard him say this description of alcoholism one time. He said, alcoholism has three stages. Stage one, fun. Stage two, fun with some problems. Stage three, problems. The fun is over. That's the best description I've ever heard. So do you remember when it was fun? I sure do, when I was a kid. And all the uncles would come over. My grandma would come over, Dad. And the fun of a party. Remember the fun of the party when the party began? Really joyous. A lot of handshaking, a lot of hugging. First drink was poured. No problem. Everybody's still having a good time. Lots of joking around. But as the minutes and hours start to move on, two, three, four drinks happen, and the whole sound, just kind of the timbre of it, just changes. What was happy and joyous and fun and great getting together started to get a little meaner. People started to speak louder, but angry loud, and started making accusations about one another, and resentments had come out, and the kids were dismissed. And it's like, well, we're having a good, no, kids, you kind of get out of here. And we, you know, we'd go down to the basement of my house, and then they'd start to fight. And there'd be pounding and smashing, and then everybody would leave. And I'd come back upstairs and, well, where'd everybody go? We're not talking about that. And I was confused. What happened? This was supposed to be fun. My cousins were here. My uncles were here. Well, we did what most alcoholic families do. We said, well, if it didn't work that time, we'll try it again. And the same thing would happen again, and the same thing would happen again. And each time it got more and more confusing. I knew this crazy little thing. I told you that I was hiding all the time. And so I would take all the clothes out of my closet. I'm a little kid. I'd take all the clothes out, and I'd put a light over the bar where that holds the clothes. And I'd bring in a little table and a chair and some paper and pencil crayons. And I'd make up this sign that said, keep out. And I'd paste it on the outside of the door. And I'd go inside the closet and close the door and turn on the light and desperately wish for you to come in. I wanted so hard. I wanted so deeply to connect, but I was so afraid of you. I didn't know that then. I was just a little kid. Live life forward. We see it backwards. I saw it backwards. And in ongoing inventories and ongoing meditation, you start to see this kind of stuff. I build a fort in the basement, same thing, put up a sign, keep out, go inside it and wait, want for people to come in. What a metaphor for my adult life. I want you to come in, but I was so afraid of you, I'd push you away with my eyes or with my words, or wouldn't really reveal who I was. I just found different ways to push you away. I was so lonely, and yet I treated it by isolating. Isn't that the craziest thing? Is that not one of the classic symptoms of alcoholism, the family disease? That's something I'm doing. That's not something anybody's doing to me. That's something that I do. I'm lonely, so I isolate. That's what my family disease says. Hey, Rick, just be by yourself. I don't want to be by yourself. And then my dad, you know, I've often wondered, for a long time, my dad, I know now, have you ever wondered how you admit you're powerless over alcohol when you don't drink? It was always a mystery to me. I'm an Al-Anon. I'm not an alcoholic. I'm one of those disgusting social alcoholics, social drinkers that the alcoholics talk about. You know how they come to their meetings and they giggle about people that leave a half a bottle of beer on the table or a bit of wine, or, you know, they take a glass of wine out of a bottle and actually put the cork back in, and they giggle about that. I'm one of them. That's me. I say that to the alcoholics and go, we never really met one of you before. Well, here I am. That's me. So the alcohol never really did the deal. But I am powerless over alcohol. And here's a really good example of that. My dad wasn't drunk all the time. He loved the outdoors. We didn't own a cottage, but we had a friend who owned a cottage. And the friend would invite us up to the cottage. And there was great promise. Do you remember the promises? Oh, the promises. Hey, Rick, we're going to go up to the cottage. We're going to have a really great time together. We're going to go swimming. Let's do some fishing. We'll go out in the boat. Maybe we'll go in the woods and look around like you love to do. That'd be great, Rick. Oh, Dad, that'll be so much fun. And the day came and we kind of got in the car. And this is how long ago this was. Do you remember when the front seat in the car was a bench seat? Remember that? Is there anybody here that remembers that? That's how long ago we're talking. And so before we got to the cottage, there was one stop. You only get one guess what that stop was. So we parked the car, he'd run in, come back out with the bottle of whiskey. And on that bench seat, he would put the bottle. And at that second, me, the non-drinker, was powerless over alcohol. Because in that second, the alcohol had all the power. So we get to the cottage and I'm swimming by myself. Dad's on the dock drinking whiskey. Dad, come on in. Let's go swimming. No, it's okay, son. I'm watching. I'm here. And he has another drink. Dad, you know, can I do some fishing? Yeah, what do you fish from the dock, son? But Dad, let's go. No, let's go fishing. You know, okay, Dad, you want to fish? No, it's okay, son. I'm watching you right here. It's good. Dad, can I go out in the boat? Well, you can't use the motor, but hey, you know, you can go out and you can row the boat. Hello. I'm watching, son. And the sad thing about that story is that the father wanted to be doing all those things with his son, and the son wanted to be doing all those things with his father. But when alcohol is present, we are all powerless. He was not doing that to me. One of our wonderful Al-Anon speakers lives in Cincinnati, says, alcoholism is like rabies. Everybody is frothing at the mouth, whether we're drinking or not. And that's the way that played out for me. In my home, everybody came to me. I kind of became, my mother would come to me. Dad, when he was not drinking, would come to me. My sister would come to me. I was in the middle all the time. I was the oldest boy. So my mom, I was my mother's five-year-old counselor or seven-year-old therapist or nine-year-old sex therapist. I mean, it was just insane, some of the stuff that went on in that environment. But that's me. That's what happened. And I want to say unequivocally, nobody did any of that to me. It all happened, but nobody was doing it to me. I was not a victim. I was in it. We were all, I guess, victims of a disease, but the disease is an equal opportunity destroyer, whether you're drinking or not. So there's all this confusion. There's a terrific amount of violence. I don't need to talk about all of that. And so, but it was, you'd think that would be the worst part of it. But in actual fact, when I look back at it, the worst part was the calm. Those episodes between the drinking, where there was that ever-growing anxiety of, when's it going to happen again? There's that ability. You could never really, truly rest. Remember the ears listening? It happened years later with the alcoholic women listening. Are they in yet? Are they coming up the door? Oh, how does she sound when she walks down the hall? We know those sounds intimately. How does she smell when she gets into bed? We know all of that stuff. That's what I did. This uncomfortable quiet. And like I said, this mother who had the exact same thing that I got, alcoholism, the family disease. It states that in some of our literature someplace, that people in there are as affected by the non-drinker as much as they are by the drinker. That's a hard thing in a room of Al-Anons to say. I used to say that when my mother was alive, because she was a 47-year member of Al-Anon, my mom, when she died. She would admit it herself. We take a look at that. So if alcoholism is a family disease, we're all kind of in there together. And it's like you don't even have to drink to be affecting others by it. It's an amazing thing. And we can actually live. There's this thing in Al-Anon now. I know when I came in, I was, if you could be racist in Al-Anon, I was racist. And this is how I was racist. if somebody came in that didn't have the experience of living with a rabidly active alcoholic, I thought, what are you doing here? You don't belong here. I was prejudiced. People would come in and say, well, you know, I think there was some alcoholism somewhere. I go, what? You think? Man, oh man, I lived it. That was just me being a goof. I now see that people come in and the family disease of alcoholism can transfer over even when there's no drinking going on. When you look at the spiritual, emotional, mental component that we understand alcoholism, it's truly an amazing thing. So like I said, I started into that Alateen, and those three Alateens from Kalamazoo, Michigan, of all places on the planet, walked into the front door of my little house in Scarborough, Ontario, the east side of Toronto. I was 11 years old, and I remember it as clear today as it was 52 years ago. I remember it as clear as a bell. Do you remember the first time you walked into these rooms? Remember the first time you met us? I sure remember the first time I met you. And for the first time in my life, I felt okay. It was that simple and that profound all at once. So I went to the conference that they were attending. I was amazed by what was going on. And so I started going to Alateen meetings. And I kept going to Alateen meetings for an awful long time. And they told me some great things. They said, Rick, your father has a disease. He's not a disgrace. Wow. I thought he was a disgrace. That's what I was told. He was a disgrace. That's what I saw. He was a disgrace. He has a disease. So I kind of said, well, I guess so. Because I see, I'm a people pleaser. Anybody here? Really, that's kind of a misnomer. I'm really not a people pleaser. I'm an approval sucker. I just want to fit in. So I'll do whatever I think you want me to do so that I can feel like I fit in. There's my part of my disease. And so I said, okay, he has a disease. He's not a disgrace. I'll say that. But deep down inside, I never believed he was not a disgrace. I never let go of that. Because you see, the only qualification for membership is that the problem be the alcoholic, not me. Then they said, Rick, he's an alcoholic. Your father's an alcoholic. He's not a bad man. Really? Look at all the stuff he does. Look at all that violence. Really? Okay, well, I want to fit in here because I'm really enjoying being with you guys. So I'm going to say that. Now I'm just going to, but deep down inside, I didn't know I was doing this. But I kind of held on to the fact that I believed he was a bad man. It would be many, many years before God would allow me to get through the blockage that was right there, to get that stuff that you've told me in my head to allow it to flow into my heart. And I'll tell you that story. Really, when I look back at my time in Alateen, it was primarily about relief. And I got nothing, there's nothing wrong with relief. Give me relief any day. But the problem is when I misinterpret relief to be recovery, then I'm in trouble. Because I can get relief by coming to a meeting. I get relief by meeting up with you guys. I get relief by having a good time. But I misinterpret that for the spiritual awakening, I'm doomed. And that's what I did. I did that for way too long. I learned a lot about the program when I was in Alateen. Had a ball with the, oh my God, with the teenagers. It was amazing. And but I didn't do a lot of real work because there really wasn't anything wrong with me. But I sure found comfort in being with the fellowship, and I'm so glad for that. So my disease was progressing, and I wasn't even aware of that. When I was in high school, about when I was 17 or so, I went to a Catholic high school, and they took us away on these retreats. And so one of the retreats, the retreat leaders gave us a personality test. My ongoing joke is I failed. But they gave us this personality test, and my result came back as amorphic. Anybody even know what that meant? I didn't know what it meant. So I had to ask, what does amorphic mean? And they said, well, Rick, what it means is that you kind of shape yourself to be with whoever you're with. I said, well, that's good. That means I'm really flexible and I get along. And they said, no, Rick, that means you don't know who you are. I didn't like hearing that, but I've never forgotten. I didn't know what to do with it. But it's kind of the first little entry into, oh my goodness, there's something that I'm doing here that really has nothing to do with anybody else's drinking. And then when you're in Alateen and you turn 21, it's the only place that happens in any of our programs. You get kicked out. They'd say, get out of here. Can't be bald and have a beard and stay in Alateen. So I left with a big resentment, and I went to an Al-Anon meeting, and I kind of hung out in Al-Anon. And they kind of took me in, all this graduated Alateen, and I knew stuff. I mean, you don't have to have any kind of an IQ to learn stuff in here. So just pack it in your head. A few simple bumper sticker slogans. I mean, you take a look at our stuff. I mean, it's pretty ridiculous when you just take a look at it on the surface. You can learn all that stuff. And then you start spouting a little bit of that, and people say, ooh. And so I just kind of rode on that. I loved it. I wasn't getting better. I was getting sicker. Here, I was getting sicker. In AA, I've heard them say, had a head full of AA and a belly full of booze. Know all the stuff. Have done none of the work. Same thing for me and Al-Anon. Head full of Al-Anon, and I was crashing through life. Now, here's the thing about Al-Anon. Al-Anon is phenomenal at putting out the message that this is about me. And I am phenomenally bad at hearing it. I over and over and over and over again. But as long as who I am inside doesn't believe, isn't willing to believe it, I'm not going to hear it. Take a look at this little reading. I just love this one here on September 18th. Most of us, when we first come into Al-Anon, have but one idea. Not one idea, but one idea. Sobriety for the alcoholic. Isn't that true? Yeah. You get sober, I'll be good. We learn at once that this is not Al-Anon's purpose. We have ourselves to change. Says it right in the book. Do I really internalize that? No. But I want to fit in, so I'll say it. But I really didn't do it. I didn't know I was doing this while I was doing that. That's just where I was at. And I need to say this too. I did not have a sponsor. Because you see, I was that lonely guy. I got more lonely the longer I was here. I never really said to somebody, hey, how did you get there? You show me what you did to get there. I kind of went crashing through this thing all by myself. And I became a very angry person, obsessive, never endingly seeking approval, this isolating thing, whining victim. Everybody's out to get me. Know the definition of whining? Anger, escaping through a very small hole. Now, you know, it's a three-year-old, you know, I have a little granddaughter, you know, she's 2.5, can be 3 in February. You know, she's whining, you know, it's okay, honey, you know, it's kind of cute. You know, when you're 50, no, cuteness is gone. But boy, I could do that. There I was, needy, this chameleon, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And I encourage you, what is it? How would you describe, or what are the characteristics of alcoholism, the family disease, or you? And also ask this question that was asked to me. I'll talk about it a little later. Why are you coming to Al-Anon? And I can say for a long time, I came to Al-Anon just because I was having a good time. And it was still about that. Too long. And during this time, I met the first of those three alcoholics. And then the situation was that I was a music student. That's where I studied at university, and I spent my career as a high school band director and head of a performing arts department. But at this time I was in university, and I applied to go to a music school out in Western Canada in Alberta, in Banff. And I got accepted to go to the school. And the person that accepted me said, hey, look, why don't you contact the other four people in the group? There's five, total of five. It was a brass quintet. I play the tuba. And get together a few times before you come out to the program, and you'll be far ahead when we start. That's a great idea. So I phoned three of the other people to arrange a rehearsal or two before we started the program. And then I phoned her. And I'm here to tell you that I don't even have to see you to be attracted to your alcoholism, to attract it to you. And would start what was supposed to be a 5-minute little conversation to arrange a rehearsal turned into this hour-long lust fest on the phone. and she was exciting and she was energetic and she had been places I wanted to go and she'd played music with people I wanted to play music with. She was alive, exciting and vibrant. And I was like, oh, over the phone and had never met her. And so we started talking, you know, talking more and more. And we finally did arrange for a rehearsal. But I started asking around about her because I'm a good investigator. Anybody like that? Ask questions, ask lots of questions, good investigator. And I found out that she was really cute, and that's good. I found out she was a fabulous trumpet player, and that is true to this very, very day. And I found out she was really experienced, and I wasn't, you know, at least not with other people. And that was super attractive, super attractive too. And so we kept talking on the phone more, and she was telling me things about things that her brother did to her. Really? And this little guy inside me, I didn't know I was doing this. I only know it backwards, said, wow, I can help you with that. Because you see, I'm the supplier. I don't come to you because I kind of want to have a mutually agreeable, equal relationship. I come to you because I want to help you. Because that is what I grew up with. I told you that. I was the one that got caught in the middle. I was in the middle. All I knew was people coming to me. I'm the supplier. And she'd tell me other things that others did. And then she said, your father's doing what? Really? And then one day I was at the summer job that I had. It, just as a sidebar, I worked in the liquor store for a summer job. You can't even make this stuff up. And in any, I was at this liquor store working on a Saturday. And she called me and she was drunk. And she said, my boyfriend was supposed to come over. He didn't come over. I drank this bottle of wine. Do you want to come over? Now, I've been an Alateen for a long time. And a little part of my head went, this isn't good. But the rest of me went, I can help you with that. And away I went. And that was it. And we got to the airport and we're heading out to this school out in Banff. And, you know, like she comes walking down, beautiful. Oh, man, she was gorgeous. Get on the airplane. We're flying out to Banff and I have a beer. And I'll tell you, when I say I have a beer, I mean one. She had five beers from the time we left Toronto to the time we landed in Banff. And if there's anything that I can say to you today that you can take to the bank, it's that she had five, because I've never met an Al-Anon that can't count. We know. And I've never met an AA that can. How many of you had? Two. We always know that. That's just their standard line, right? Doesn't matter. Now we believe them and all kinds of crazy stuff. But we get out there, we start playing music, and we have sex. And, oh, man, this is fantastic. But then we had something that's even better. Is there anything better? Oh, if you're an Al-Anon of my type, as the AAs say, there is something that's way better. Because we would play music, we would have sex, and then we would have therapy. She would tell me what was wrong, and I would tell her how to fix it. I felt needed. I felt wanted. I felt loved, I felt valuable, I felt whole, I felt strong, I had arrived. And a couple of weeks into this thing, used to call it a relationship, my dear friend Mildred calls it a parasitic entanglement. Hey, do you want to try that if you're single and you're kind of on some dating line, looking for a parasitic entanglement? You're going to find one. Heard another guy say it like two ticks without a dog, just chewing away at each other. That's the kind of relationships I got into. But of course, it's all about the alcoholic. Nothing to do with me. Just about them. A couple of weeks in, she says, you know, Rick, I've been seeing a therapist for a long time, but I don't need to see that therapist anymore because now I have you. Yes. That's my cocktail. Right there. That's my Jack Daniels. Right there. Am I who I am because of an alcoholic? Or do I choose alcoholics because of who I am? That's why I'm in Al-Anon. Then I left Al-Anon. Who needed? I found her. We got married. 3 years later, she left me. Oh my God, I'm this good guy. I'm the supplier. I'm the one. Oh, I come back in 1987, crawling on my knees. And that's why I marked my time, because I left. I used to say, yeah, I've been here 50 years. Oh, there's my ego. April 10, 1987, when I came back. And that's my, that's my date. And I was full blown family disease. And I started getting involved back in the program. And I find myself looking at the clock. Don't worry. I got 20 minutes to go. I find myself on a conference committee and I get there early, which is something I never did. I misjudged the time, actually. I got there early and I'm the first one in the committee room. And if you've ever done it, if you're an Al-Anon working on the Al-Anon program on an AA conference, you're basically it. And then there's this room full of AAs in an Al-Anon. That was me. And so another member comes in who's an AA, and it was the first meeting. She didn't know me. I didn't know her. She introduced herself. She said, yeah, hi, I'm Rick. And she said, well, what's your position on the committee? And I said, oh, I'm the Al-Anon liaison. She said, Al-Anon? You're an Al-Anon? I don't look like I'm an Al-Anon. But what she thought Al-Anon would look like, as my sponsor would say it, in a blue hair and I didn't bake cookies. And then she says this question to me, and I asked it to you earlier and I'll say it again. She said, why are you in Al-Anon? To which I answered, everything about the alcoholic. Alcoholic father, alcoholic grandmother, oh, poor is me. That's what I did. And then as I'm walking away, I mean, I'm still without a sponsor, by the way. And as I'm walking away from that hotel, there's like a little God moment. And God like reaches in and says, hey, God, hey, Rick, there's more to it than that. And that was kind of an opening for me. And a few years later, I'm going to Al-Anon, still without a sponsor. A few years later, not getting any better. Standing on the side of the road one time, waiting to cross, and a bus comes. And out of nowhere, this thought comes into my head. An impulse, really. Hey, Rick, just take a step. It'll be over. And I started to have those kind of things happen to me. Because, you see, I'm in the rooms, but I'm not doing the deal. I'm reading the books. I'm saying the words. I'm showing up physically. Works if you work it. Remember, we used to chant that at the end of the meeting. Keep coming back. It works if you work it. And I'd go home and not work. So this is what's happening to me, even though I'm doing all that fellowship stuff. I want to step in front of a bus, walking downtown Toronto, right by the waterfront. I think, just jump in, Rick. It'll be done. And I started to get these really frightening things. I wanted to harm myself. It was horrifying. I wasn't living with any alcoholic at that time. That's how good I was getting without doing the deal, doing it alone. There's tradition 5 says we understand the alcoholic. Part of one of the, we have, you know, what does it say? We have one purpose, to help families of alcoholics. We practice steps ourselves, welcome and give comfort, and we understand the alcoholic. When you read what this says in the description, I mean, it says go to open AA meetings. And it also says in there, I wrote it down, just because I don't want to misquote this, because people get so messed up with this. This is right out of our Al-Anon book. Going to AA meetings gives us greater understanding of the alcoholic's problem, as well reading some of the many books on the subject, particularly the basic book, Alcoholics Anonymous. Right out of our literature. Tradition says, understand the alcoholic. Literature says, read the book. I'm at a conference, I see a flyer on a chair that says, Big Book Seminar, Al-Anon's Welcome. I go, show up at this thing in London, Ontario. Didn't even tell them I was an Al-Anon, pretended I was an AA, sat at the back. It was with the original Big Book guys, Joe McHugh and Charlie P. And Joe McHugh stood up and did this talk about the thing that the people we love have that I don't have, the phenomenon of craving. But see, they told me that my father was an alcoholic. He wasn't a bad man. I didn't believe you. I still thought he was a bad man. I thought he was weak. I thought he could stop. I thought he was doing it to me and because of me. I didn't utter those words, but I wasn't willing to look at me. I just stay focused, that gigantic victim, big V on my head. And this guy, Joe McHugh, stands up and does this talk on the phenomenon of craving, and I am mesmerized by it. I'm not an alcoholic, but I know alcoholics. There's been lots of them. And at the end of his talk, he says this. He says, that's why when an alcoholic is in the bar all night and they walk out into the parking lot and fall flat on their face in a puddle of water, and somebody comes over to them and lifts them up, their face is cut, their arm is cut, their clothes are damaged, they're soaking wet, and you say, hey, can I help you? The alcoholic will say, yes, get me another drink. And at that moment, it happened for me. It's like that block, that unwillingness that I had to believe what you were telling me got removed. And it went right down into me. And I went, wow, he really could not stop. He really was not doing that to me or because of me. Nor was my grandmother, nor was that first wife, or were the other two women. I didn't marry the other two. Long-term relationship. They weren't doing it to me. They really do have a disease, and they're not a disgrace. They're alcoholics. They're not bad people. And for the first time, I got some compassion for where they were. I felt some love and I felt some forgiveness. And that's when I was able to start to take a look at myself. Because I could no longer blame it on any of them. That gig was up, over at that point. I had to let go. Like that great story of, you know, we have somebody here from the Philippines, you know, kind of in Borneo, you know, that story about the way they catch monkeys, you know, they hollow out a coconut and a monkey puts its hand inside with grabs a fistful of fruit and nuts and stuff and can't get its hand out because it won't let go of its, won't release the fist. And the hunters just come and take the monkey. And that was me. I wouldn't let go of what I believe. And you see, in and of myself, I'm incapable of letting go. But with God's help, I can let go. And that's what happened to Joe McHugh. A little sidebar, which is totally fascinating to me. Joe McHugh's wife, who's still alive, by the way, is my grand sponsor. That I didn't have a sponsor when I heard him talk, but that is the truth. It's an amazing thing. I sat in her living room. I have a picture of her right here on my desk. That's just kind of a little sidebar. So anyhow, during that time, I actually did have a sponsor, but I didn't, here's was the difference. I had somebody offer to be my sponsor. And I don't think that's legit. There's something about, I have to ask for me to make it legit. But this guy offered to be my sponsor. I said, okay, good, I'm off the hook. And he helped me out a little bit, and then he left. And so I was without a sponsor. So in 1994, we had this conference here in Toronto, and I have this dear friend, Mildred, and I've been praying. I do a prayer thing with her. I still do it to this very day, every Monday morning. And I was praying for a sponsor. And so we had a speaker come to speak at our area Al-Anon conference, and Mildred introduced me to this person. And we went out and had something to eat that night. And I thought, oh man, I am grooving on what she's saying. She scares the crap out of me, but man, I am really grooving on what she's saying. And then she did a talk on Saturday night, and I totally, totally identified with it. And we were so, like, the specifics of our lives would be so different, but the emotions were so clear. And she said, after everybody thanked her, she came to get me and said, hey, let's go back to that place and get some more ice cream. Beautiful. Beautiful. So she said on the way there, she said, tell me about you. And I said, well, I tried to chop up my wife's head with an axe on a camping trip. She laughed. We bonded. I didn't know that I needed a potential murderer for a sponsor, but God did. And that's a true story about that hatchet thing. And that's how it started. So like a couple of weeks later, I'm on my way to a retreat in Mildred, and she said, have you found a sponsor yet? I said, no. She says, I think you have. That's too crazy. It's insane. But she said, let's pray on that. I prayed on it. I wrote a letter. Said, I love meeting you. I'll do absolutely anything you ask me to do if you will sponsor me. And I sent the letter off. Well, 10 days later, I got a package. But oh my goodness, this is, either I'm in or it's a long, long, long forget it, pal. And so I read this letter, and it was such a beautiful letter. And she said, I spoke to my husband, because my sponsor is a woman. And men sponsor men, women sponsor women. And that's a good general guideline. I only sponsor men. I do not sponsor women, but I have a woman sponsoring. She said, I talked to my husband about it. And he said, well, the bottom line is it a legitimate Al-Anon request? And she said, well, yes, it is. And so he said, well, what's the problem? I love that guy, you know, JD. And so she said this to me. Welcome to the, let's give it a go. Welcome to the family. And I say that to you tonight. Welcome to the family. And put this in perspective. I've been in Altine all that time. I used somebody as a sponsor, but I never made a commitment. I was out. I came back. Somebody offered to be my sponsor. That was easy. He left. I was without a sponsor. Finally, I had reached the point. I wasn't blaming them anymore. I knew it was me. I knew this is the stuff I'm doing. I said, I'll do anything you ask me to do. And I have done that. And that was 26 and a half years ago. I still talk to her every Monday night. Talk to her today. We have a Zoom family thing. And she, after she said, welcome to the family, it's the last nice thing she said to me for years. She said, you are the sickest Al-Anon I have ever met. She said, I have never met anybody that has been here this long and it has done nothing like you. Ooh, I signed up for this. But on some other level, it was like, at last. At last. Because you see, I felt like a fraud here for so many years. Because I saw you growing. I saw you changing. I wasn't doing that. I wasn't changing. I was getting angrier. And I wasn't doing what you were doing. That's why. And finally, God said, hey, Rick, it's time to do this. And my sponsor, she's very organized. She sent me a contract. This is it. It's a sponsorship contract. Oh, my God, what am I signing up for? And listen to what she said. I love this one. Remember, people have been around a long time. Remember when we used to call people we sponsor pigeons? That's her term. She still uses that terminology. This is, listen to this. I will not ask the pigeon to do something I am not doing, haven't done, or I'm not willing to do. And that's the difference between sponsorship and therapy, counseling, or life coaching. I am not going to tell you to do anything that I haven't done, have not done, or not willing to do. I am an equal with you. I might be farther ahead, but we're on the same plane. And there actually might be times and things you say will help me. Really? Oh, yeah, that happened. Then she started to really get at me. She said, I want you to really understand. And she said this too. Listen to this. She said, encourage the pigeon to understand he, she has the family disease of alcoholism. I'm not just affected by your drinking. I have something inside me that's diagnosable. 2.5 years ago, I was diagnosed with an aggressive, high-risk form of prostate cancer. It was in me, and I needed to seek a solution. So if I see what I have the same way as the cancer that I had, I can say that today, thank God, at least 2 weeks ago, that's what the doctor said. We're calling you now a cancer survivor. I'm very happy for that. That's another whole story. But if we're taking a look at alcoholism, the family disease, and why I'm in Al-Anon, why do I have to do all this stuff if the problem's out there? I don't. If the problem's out there, just get rid of what's out there. If there's nothing wrong inside, why do I have to do the steps? If there's no unmanageability, I don't have to do 2 to 12 because I'm not a manager. Everything's manageable. I'll go out and manage. But my life is unmanageable. What does that look like? Tells us in our literature. Remember, like I said, our literature is fantastic. It's saying this stuff to us. I'm just terrible at hearing it. Until I reached that point where I was willing and able to hear it. Listen to this. May 4th in our ODAN. Many of my punishments are self-inflicted. What? Can you imagine if we put that in our public information posters? Nobody would come to Al-Anon. It's not about self-inflicted. It's abuse. Self-inflicted. They're doing it to me. We get here and say, no, no, you do it yourself. What? In some way unfathomable to my intelligence, my suffering could be the consequence of my own attitudes, my own actions, or my own neglects. June 3rd, if we really do want peace of mind, the first thing to realize is that it does not depend on conditions outside us, them, but conditions inside us. And this is my favorite line in all of our literature. Al-Anon's prime purpose is to help us deal with the problems that alcoholism has aggravated, not caused. Like I said earlier, am I who I am because of an alcoholic? Or do I choose alcoholic because of who I am? So she got me to do these steps. She told me a way to do these steps, really concrete, precise, specific way to do these steps. And I finished step one, and she said this most beautiful thing I'd ever heard in Al-Anon, ever. I read all these books. I answered all these questions. We kind of went over the answers. And then she said this to me. And I got the thread of how I, a non-drinker, can be powerless over alcohol and how my life is unmanageable, what my unmanageability looks like. And she said, hey, Rick, congratulations. You've done step one to the best of your ability. Listen to this music. Move on. Oh, my God. Move on. You're not stuck anymore. Move on. And what does unmanageability look like? Here's this little this turquoise thing. You got this in your group? This tells us what our unmanageability is like. You fail to recognize your accomplishments. Nothing to do about somebody's drinking. You still feel responsible for others as you did for the problem drinker in your life. Not about the drinker. Do you isolate yourself from other people? Do you attract and or seek, not just attract, seek people who tend to be compulsive or abusive? Three of them. And this one, do you cling to relationships? Don't you hate that? Cling. You know what clings? Plastic wrap. That clings. You know what else clings? My underwear on a hot day when I'm sitting in a wooden chair. You get up and you... That's what clings. Do I want cling in my relationship? That's who I was. And why do I cling? Because I love you, because I want to be with you. We have so much in common. No, 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 no. It doesn't say that. Do you cling to relationships because you are afraid of being alone? Busted. May you be busted too. Because that is the necessary requirement for surrender. And when I am able to surrender, when we willingly surrender, maybe not so willingly, when we surrender to the spiritual discipline, the 12 steps, our lives will be transformed. And I did that fifth step. And when we were finished it, I looked at her and I said, there's absolutely nothing I haven't told you. And she looked at me and she said, I love you more. Because I know you better. That turned my life around and I've never looked back. Because my deepest fear was, if you knew me, if you knew what I had done, if you knew what I had thought, you knew what my motives were, if you knew what my impulses were, I truly would be alone. Spent my whole life walking towards New York, but I wanted to go to Los Angeles. And the steps turned me around and pointed me in the right direction, in the direction of the spiritual awakening. In a continue to wake up, ongoing basis. I don't see so much things the way I want them to be. I see things as I am. And if I see myself as a victim, I'm going to see everything in the world as coming out to get me. If I see myself as being the supplier, I'm always going to be looking for people that I can supply to. And what the program does is it takes me all those things that I do, my neediness, my anger, my victimization, martyrdom, whining, all those kind of stuff. It takes me and it changes who I am. Then I start to see life differently. And there's that funny saying we have in Al-Anon, the longer I'm here, the better you get. Isn't that an amazing thing? But the longer I'm here, I start to see things differently. My perspective, well and truly, does change. And that's the power of working a program, of doing the deal with a sponsor. That's the key for me, the absolute key. My sponsor is not God, but she sure shared with me her God and certainly showed me the actions for me to take so that I could find mine. And like I said at the beginning, that's an ever-expanding awakening. So happy to be with you today. I'll end with this. There's a beautiful painting, stands on the side altar of a chapel in St. Paul's Cathedral in London, England. I physically sat in there. It's like life-size. It doesn't hang on the wall. It's got a stone frame. And I have the picture right here on my desk. Picture of a traditional robed figure standing with its right hand raised, knocking on the door of a cottage that has vines all around it. And if you look at it, we all know this. There's no handle on the outside of the door. Figure's holding a lantern in its left hand, right hand raised. At the top of the painting, it says, "The light of the world." And beneath the painting, it says, "Behold, I stand at the door and knock. If any man hear my voice and open the door, I will sup with him and he with me. In every step I take, I open that door a little more, and a little more." Because the awakening doesn't happen in 12. The awakening happens from 1 to 11. Then 12, it continues to expand by continuing to work those steps, by continuing to practice the principles, and by continuing to carry this message whenever asked, whenever, wherever, however, whenever asked, we carry this message. Thank you for your message being carried to me. And my sponsor said, first off, when she started sponsoring me, the best wisdom we have in our room, she said, "Rick, we do not think our way into right action. We act our way into right thinking. And the actions we take as members of Al-Anon are called the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. I came because I felt the heat. I stay because I see the light. Thank you for allowing me to be part of the light of your beautiful group tonight." God bless y'all. Have a great Christmas.